This year marks 100 years since the birth of the remarkable Rosalind Franklin, born on the 25th of July 1920. Her distinguished career in crystallography not only led to understanding the structure of DNA, but also advanced studies on coal and carbon, as well as the structure of viruses. I'm science journalist Izzy Clark, and this centenary series from the Rosalind Franklin Institute explores Franklin's life, work, and in this third and final episode, her legacy. What Franklin achieved in her lifetime is quite astonishing, even more so when you consider the time frame. She passed away at the young age of 37 from ovarian cancer, and while she may not have received the fame of her colleagues in her lifetime, her pioneering work makes her one of the most important scientists of the 20th century. Her approach to science lives on, and there's one institute in particular that, like Franklin, continues to push the boundary between physical and biological sciences.
My name is James Naismith. I'm the director of the Rosalind Franklin Institute. The Rosalind Franklin Institute is a new institute funded by the government, but it works as an independent charity. It was announced in 2017, and it began life really sort of 2018. And its goal is to do physical science that advances understanding and technology and life science aimed at devising better medicines. So really following in the footsteps of Rosalind Franklin.
Just what was it about Franklin that the Institute wants to convey in their work?
When I look at Rosalind Franklin, I look at a really pioneering scientist. She came from a physical science background. She made seminal contribution to DNA through really careful physical science experiments. And of course, ultimately, the structure of DNA has determined modern medicine. It's a phenomenal discovery. It ranks probably one of the greatest discoveries of humankind. But then she went also on to apply that technology to other important problems and viruses. And so we want to be like Rosalind Franklin if we can. We want to take physical science technologies, and ours is primarily focused around electrons, mass spectrometry and chemistry, to make really big differences in life sciences across all life sciences.
And the Rosalind Franklin Institute is applying that to the biggest scientific problems of today. And for 2020, that's COVID-19.
When we think about the structure of proteins, we often want other things to bind to them. And so one of the things we've been working on is a means to raise something called nanobodies. So nanobodies are a type of antibody, but they come from llamas. And they can be very helpful in understanding molecules that are important for life. That sounds very esoteric and dull, but I'll come on to the concrete example. Since the lockdown started, we started work on COVID-19, and we have now made molecules that completely kill the virus in culture. These molecules are very potent binders of the virus, and when tested in what's called neutralization assays, so this is a means of, can you stop the virus in infecting cells? They're incredibly potent molecules.
How does that work exactly?
The virus has on its surface a protein called spike. So whenever you watch the news, you'll see a ball with little sticks sticking up from it, and those are the spike. So our molecules bind to the spike. And once they bind to the spike, the virus can no longer enter the cell because the bit the virus uses to, the key the virus turns in the door is that spike. And essentially we've stuck a big bit of plasticine over that key.
Wow, okay, I see. So what stage are you at with that at the moment?
We've published a paper through peer review, so the paper is now out. The reagents are available for other scientists, of course, to use and adapt. And we hope to begin work, if we can persuade some funders, to try and test these molecules in animals as the first step into trying to get them into the clinic for treatment.
But that's not all. Rosalind Franklin's work was vital to understanding the structure of DNA, often referred to as the building blocks of life. Now, the Rosalind Franklin Institute wants to go a step further.
One of our goals in the Franklin Institute is to map life inside cells. Really inspired by Rosalind Franklin, who worked on DNA, a molecule of life, one of the things we're doing is using electrons in a partnership with Thermo Fisher, funded by the Wellcome Trust and the EPSRC, to build a really unique capability in the UK in world-leading so-called electron tomography. And that would allow us to look at the structure of molecules inside the cell and inside tissue. So we can look at the junction between two cells. We can look inside a cell to see how drugs work and really look at life as it's happening inside cells.
Institutes around the world are doing tomography, but it's in its infancy. The Rosalind Franklin Institute hopes to make it routine and elevate the level of detail captured in this latest form of imaging.
I think the implications would come across all areas of science. If we're able to describe how the virus enters the cell and what it does inside the cell as we look at it, it's clearly going to change how we think about COVID. Had we had this technology, I believe we would have been able to understand COVID a lot better. It's going to change how we treat parasitic diseases. So unfortunately, many, many people in sub-Saharan Africa suffer from diseases we don't care enough about. But these parasites live inside your cells. So the best way to see them is to look inside the cell. And we'd be able to do that. And then finally, if we think about things that in diseases of the brain, often that's because of the connections between things in the brain. Well, imagine being able to seek all the molecules inside the brain.
It's an exciting time, and if successful, like Franklin's work, our understanding of life sciences will be transformed once more. James reflected on what Rosalind's work means to the world today.
What she showed, what I would say, was that at the time she was recognised as a leader. There's a notion growing up that she was somehow ignored. Quite the opposite is true. She was a highly regarded international figure, and just tragically she died young. And she was known primarily at the time for her work in viruses. She was really a pioneer in the study of viruses. So what are we left with from her legacy? I think the notion that X-ray imaging was a really important way to study biological molecules. She wasn't the first to do it. She wasn't the only one doing it. But her work really showed how powerful this approach could be.
And James, as the director of the Rosalind Franklin Institute, what does her work mean to you?
I'm a chemist, and I come from a position that understanding where molecules are and what they are is really important to understanding how they work. And as a chemist, I'm always comfortable with atoms. And I'd like to believe that Rosalind Franklin was informed by that same push, that by understanding where atoms are in a molecule, how they're arranged, really can unlock a lot of secrets of life. And she showed that. She absolutely delivered on that. And if the Franklin as an institute gets even a quarter of the way to some of our goals, then I think we've tried to live up to her high standard.
It's not just the Rosalind Franklin Institute that continues Franklin's legacy or her approach to experimentation. Franklin was leading a team at Birkbeck University up until her death, a team that she inspired and a team who pushed the boundaries of structural biology after she was gone. One member of that team was Kenneth Holmes, who shared his fond memories of Rosalind and how she shaped his career.
I graduated in Cambridge in the summer of 1955. In the final year of my degree, I had specialised in crystallography and wrote around to find someone willing to take a young, would-be crystallographer to do a doctoral degree. J.D. Bernal, who was Professor of Physics at Birkbeck College, London, passed my letter on to Rosalind Franklin. Rosalind offered me a research assistantship, which I gladly accepted. In hindsight, it was one of the luckiest chances of my life. It determined my career.
This was to work on the structure of tobacco mosaic virus, otherwise known as TMV. Rosalind had just been given a grant from the British Agricultural Research Council and put a team together. This also included John Finch and Aaron Klug. Klug and Franklin coincidentally met on the stairs of their Birkbeck office. He had been working with a different team, and yet his theoretical gifts combined perfectly with Rosalind's technical skills. And so he jumped ship. Rosalind decided John Finch should work with Aaron Klug, which they continued to do so for the next 40 years, and Ken should work with her.
As I had graduated in physics, I knew little about biology. I was only 20 when I came to Birkbeck, and of course I was in awe of such an experienced scientist as Rosalind Franklin, and full of admiration. At first it was difficult to get to know her. She was no conversationalist, but she was a very good teacher. She was quite demanding and wanted the work to be done exactly as she said, and so she taught me. She was very keen on detail, and I learned to be similar. I was the only student very involved in her work, so I was very lucky to have a supervisor who spent so much time instructing me.
Ken and Rosalind would work down in the cellar where she taught him how to set up the X-ray set. This had to be done in the dark and was very exacting work. Rosalind grew the tobacco mosaic virus and prepared the gels that gave a clear X-ray diffraction diagram known as fibre diagrams. Ken took the photos. It wasn't an easy machine to use, and Ken says he spent a lot of time trying to prevent vacuum leaks.
We used fluorescent discs to be able to see the X-ray beams and to get them aligned. What Rosalind taught me was responsible for the success of all the X-ray photographs that I took for the rest of my scientific life. After learning these techniques from Rosalind, I continued to work on fibres for most of my career, mostly fibrous proteins called actin and myosin that play an important role in muscle contraction. My training on TMV stood me in good stead to solve the structure of actin.
Later in 1955, Rosalind acquired another collaborator, an American biophysicist who had done his PhD on tobacco mosaic virus, Don Casper. His work and Rosalind's fitted very well together, and he became a great colleague and friend to the team.
Our group worked very well together. The research was very successful, and a stream of papers were being published. Rosalind and I set out to interpret the zero error line, the specific feature of CMV. Nowadays, this problem would be solved probably in a few seconds on any laptop. But then I had to devise an analog scheme involving log paper and rows of possible zeros. I guess Rosalind and I were equally compulsive about this kind of thing. We had to know we were right.
With a stream of papers being published, Rosalind and her team's work started to gain more and more recognition.
I remember one Friday evening at the Royal Institution, Robley Williams, a virologist from Berkeley, California, was giving a lecture, and Aaron and Rosalind had set up an exhibit. It was the custom at the Royal Institution to wear evening dress for evening lectures. Rosalind looked so beautiful in a red blouse and a long black skirt, standing and explaining the exhibit.
In 1956, Rosalind went to America for a conference in New Hampshire. Not only was Rosalind able to share their advancing work on the structure of tobacco mosaic virus, but there was an opportunity to enjoy her other passions of walking and climbing in the mountains.
Unfortunately, at the end of her trip, she began to have some worrying pains. When she got home, she was admitted to University College Hospital for an operation. She came back to Birkbeck as quickly as possible and never talked about her operation, so we didn't know what was wrong. We were glad to have her back. She was working as hard as ever. I was still very dependent on her, but in her absence I had learnt to work independently and to make my own decisions.
There was great excitement when the structure of tobacco mosaic virus was more or less complete, and Rosalind and her team were asked to build a model, which was to be on display at the 1958 World Exhibition in Brussels. Unfortunately, Rosalind had passed away and never saw the final model.
I only worked with Rosalind for 3 years, but in that time I got to know her well. In September 1957, my wife Mary and I married, and we invited Rosalind to our wedding in Sussex, but she was away at that time. The illness seemed under control, and she had gone to another of her extensive American tours. We wanted to invite her for dinner, but in that autumn she was in hospital again, and the evening did not take place until the spring of 1958. It was a wonderful evening. Rosalind was very cheerful and talkative. She gave us some funny stories about her time in Paris, and she gave us a coffee grinder as a wedding present. We ground some coffee in the coffee grinder, when she then told us quite calmly that she was going back to Marsden Hospital for new treatment. It was the last time I saw her. I can still remember the feeling of devastation which went with her death. She was far too young. The time I spent working with her was far too short.
Rosalind Franklin clearly touched the lives of those she worked with at Birkbeck. She had started studying human poliovirus, and after Franklin's premature death on the 16th of April 1958, Klug took over leadership of the group. He credited her not only with introducing him to viruses, but with showing him that you have to tackle long and difficult problems rather than publishing clever papers. Klug and Doncaster continued this effort on understanding the structure of poliovirus and other spherical viruses, leading Klug to win the Nobel Prize in Chemistry in 1982 for the invention of electron tomography. Rosalind has received much belated posthumous recognition. To celebrate the centenary of her birth, the Royal Mint revealed the Rosalind Franklin 50 pence piece. There's at least 40 buildings or projects named after her, including the 2019 European Space Agency's ExoMars rover. Newnham College, Cambridge have named a student residential building after her. And across the pond, there's even the Rosalind Franklin University of Medicine and Science in Chicago. Her hard work and legacy continues to inspire future generations. We'll leave you with these kind messages sent in over the past few months from listeners.
Hello, my name's Elspeth Garman. I'm Professor of Molecular Biophysics at the University of Oxford in the Biochemistry Department. Rosalind Franklin has inspired me reading about her fantastic achievements in three different fields, the versatility and the way she applied techniques across different problems has been really interesting for me to see. And the fact that by the age of 37, she'd made three great contributions to three completely different fields is truly inspirational.
My name is Peter Harris, and I work at the University of Reading, where my main interest is carbon. Now, before she moved into biology, Rosalind Franklin worked on carbon materials, and the paper that she published on this in 1951 is one of the classics of the carbon literature. Now, when Rosalind Franklin worked on carbon and graphite, this field was something of a backwater. But today, carbon science is one of the most exciting areas of research, and we've had two Nobel Prizes for carbon science in the last 25 years. Rosalind Franklin's work in this field is still highly relevant, and just this year I've published a paper on carbon with some Australian colleagues, which draws on the brilliant work that Franklin did all those years ago.
Hello, I'm Madeline Evans, an archivist at Churchill Archive Centre in Cambridge, and I'm thrilled to include the papers of Rosalind Franklin in our collections. Rosalind Franklin's documents, which include scientific notebooks, X-ray crystallography photographs and letters, are really special because they're a window to the important research she was undertaking. My favourite item in Franklin's archive is a document written by Aaron Klug. It's titled Professor Burnell and Virus Research at Birkbeck College and is a bit of an unusual choice as it was not written by Franklin, but it's really evocative of their working life together at Birkbeck. For example, he writes, "The X-ray tubes were down in the basement, and sometimes the condensation on the pipes resulted in drops of water falling from the ceiling, and I have a vivid picture of Rosalind sitting under an umbrella carrying out the delicate operations for setting a TMV camera."
I'm Andrew Steele. I'm a biologist and science writer, and I've just finished my first book, Ageless, which is about the biology of aging. And the way that Rosalind Franklin's impacted on my life is actually kind of generic, but in a way that makes it all the more amazing. Because when I think back through all the stories that are in my book, almost all of them rest in some way on our understanding of the structure of DNA. Whether it's the sort of explicitly genetic things, the DNA sequencing, understanding the genes that contribute to aging, But even a lot of the other experiments where scientists are trying to slow down the aging of worms or flies or mice, the preliminary experiments that allow us to move on to understanding aging in humans, a lot of these are done by genetic manipulation that simply wouldn't be possible if we didn't understand the structure of DNA, as so beautifully elucidated by Rosalind Franklin's amazing photograph. And if you talk to almost any biologist in any discipline, the story is going to be the same. She simply made an impact across the whole of biology.
My name is Gabby Heller. I am currently the Rosalind Franklin Research Fellow at Newnham College. Rosalind Franklin's use of X-ray crystallography was incredibly powerful for determining the structures of biomolecules, allowing scientists to see and therefore understand how these biomolecules work at the atomistic level for the first time. Like Franklin, I am also interested in the structure of biomolecules, particularly proteins. There are a number of coincidental overlaps between Rosalind Franklin's life and my own, but perhaps I'm most influenced by her own words in several letters that she wrote home during World War II while she was at Newnham College. Franklin covers everything from Churchill's speeches to an anecdote about someone who fell off a punt at 8:30 a.m. but still had time for breakfast and a bath before a lecture at 9. One letter in particular, dated October 1939, begins by thanking her parents for the gas mask, and then continues on to describe the blackout of the college and the fact that many of her lecturers were away. In lockdown, I find myself thinking about these letters often and how eerily reminiscent these strange COVID-19 times are of those 8 decades earlier.
My name's Shirley Franklin. Rosalind was my aunt and my godmother. She died when I was 9. I used to stay with her mother, my granny, a lot. My granny told me that I was very like Rosalind and that I too should be a scientist. Such a shame that I had such a rotten science education at my posh girls' school. I've always stood up for Rosalind in the press when she's been described as a difficult woman, which I think is a deeply sexist insult. I know that she and I share a perspective of being frank and honest, saying what we believe. As a socialist, I'm proud that she was influenced by the politically left side of our family. Both her aunts were suffragettes, and her Uncle Hugh dog-whipped Winston Churchill over the suffragette movement.
I'm Stevie Bain, a researcher at the University of Edinburgh. And pretty much all of my research has been dependent on an understanding of DNA. And Franklin took the picture that enabled its structure to be understood. Without that image, I think it may have taken decades longer to identify its structure. I think as well, as a woman in science, her story really resonates and highlights issues in the field that still unfortunately exist. So beyond being an obviously excellent scientist and insanely productive, she must have been pretty resilient. I can't imagine that the environment she was working in would have been particularly pleasant, but she was committed. And I guess her story inspires me to work hard and focus on what I want to achieve. I think science lost the most when she passed away at such a young age, because imagine what she could have achieved with a few more decades.
Thank you to everyone who sent in messages, and thank you to Kenneth Holmes and James Naismith. I'm Izzy Clark, and this has been a Campus PR production for the Rosalind Franklin Institute. You can hear episode 1 and 2 about Rosalind's life and work on the Rosalind Franklin Institute's website. That's rfi.ac.uk.